One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home, plus fast and free shipping site-wide. Shop now through July 28th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here and you can shop it right from your couch. It's Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, score amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals. And get it all with fast and free shipping on everything. Yep, even the big stuff. Right to your door. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer. And did we mention they only last 5 days? So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the season before it fizzles out. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale now through July 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Today on The Grave Talks, writing with ghosts, these walls still talk. A conversation with author Brian Paone. What happens when an author decides to write his next novel inside one of the most haunted prisons in America? Brian Paone did exactly that. Over the course of 8 weeks, he wrote These Walls Still Talk on site at the notorious Missouri State Penitentiary. Working at night and fully immersed in the prison's eerie, abandoned atmosphere, Brian brought to life the story of Hannah, a woman who returns to MSP to confront the dark spirit that's haunted her for years, only to find the prison has other plans. Blending real-life haunted locations with immersive paranormal fiction, Brian reveals what it's like to write a ghost story in a place already full of them. Step behind the cell doors and experience the creative process where fact and phantoms converge. Today on The Grave Talks, Writing with Ghosts, a conversation with author Brian Paone. Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to join me tonight. I appreciate it. I'm excited to talk about your book. It's called These Walls Still Talk. Now, you've written quite a few books.
This is book number 11 overall. I say overall because I do have a trilogy. So that trilogy obviously makes up, you know, three of the books, but overall that's my 11th, and my 12th novel is coming out September 13th. So yeah, so I will have 12 books total in like 2 months.
That's a lot.
It is. And then my number, lucky number 13 is I am going to the Kentucky's most haunted inn to write the next on location haunted house novel. That's a whole nother story about how that wound up happening.
And I want to talk about that. And when the book comes out, too, I want to talk about your experience of going there. Because, so this is what's so fascinating to me. This is when I read about the book, and I don't even know how I think I like Facebook or some algorithm on a social media was like, you might like this book. And I'm like, well, that looks interesting because I'm always looking at paranormal stuff. And then what fascinated me, because it's a fiction book, but you went to the Missouri State Penitentiary and you wrote this book there.
Over 8 weeks.
8 weeks.
Yeah, and 80% of the time I was in there, and it was at night, and I was alone in the dark. And really, the way that Missouri State Penitentiary is set up was, and there's a whole backstory about how this even came to be. How,
and I want to hear that.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that. But I was told that I'm the very first author who's ever been allowed to stay inside the Missouri State Penitentiary for any period of time to write, and I was also told that I will be the last.
Really?
I was given like the golden ticket, the one key. I was told by the top boss there, Sheila, that I got the green light and that this will never happen again. Like I'm it. They're not going to make this a thing. They're not going to let other authors come in. And what happened was on Friday and Saturday nights, the Missouri State Penitentiary is set up. Actually, Friday day and Saturday day and night, the way it's set up is they have two historic tours during the day, during daylight hours, which have nothing to do with the paranormal. It is purely the history of the prison, you know, and stuff like that. And then at nighttime, they have two ghost tours back to back, and then they have a free roam ghost hunt. The free roam ghost hunt will go to either 2 a.m., 3 a.m., or 6 a.m., depending on the night and the price. So sometimes it only goes to 2, it's a little bit less money. If you want to go to 3, it's a little bit more money. If you want to go to 6, it's more money, right? And that's free roam. There's no tour guides involved. It's you go in and you have access to four of the buildings, which are the four buildings that make up the novel. I kept the novel very specific to only the buildings that people can ghost hunt in. But what happened was when I got there, each tour guide allowed me to give like a 45 second to 90 second kind of introduction during their safety brief. So I could talk to the guests, and I was able to do this on the historic tours and the ghost tours and then the free room ghost hunt every single day. And it was basically like, hey, everybody, like after the safety brief, you know, the stuff that, don't close any doors, you know, don't do this, don't do that. And then they would be like, oh, and we want to introduce you to somebody real quick for a minute, you know, and I would stand up and I would say, you know, hey, everybody, you know, my name is Brian Paoni. I'm an author from Salem, Massachusetts. I'm here on location writing a horror novel about a ghost hunt gone wrong, you know, on the property. And I would tell people this. So one, I didn't surprise anybody if they walk into, you know, housing unit 3 and there's just a dude sitting in a cell with a laptop. I didn't want anybody to be like spooked or weirded out. But I also told them for the reason and I made it very clear at the end of my speeches. I said, if you see me. And I would do this more for the free roam. I said, if you see me and you're headed to the dungeon or you're heading to 3D, grab me and I'll go down with you and I'll write with you, because those are the two places on the property that I refuse to go by myself because of how terrifying they are. So I would kind of make that speech and people would chuckle. And I almost nightly, never failed, somebody would see me writing and they would be like, hey, author dude, if they couldn't remember my name. Hey, you know, we're going down to the dungeon. Now we're going to go to the dungeon, you know, you want to come? And I would always say yes, because I would never go down by myself. I always took advantage of being able to write in those two locations as long as somebody was with me. Telling this story, because what it was happening was about 3 weeks into my 8 weeks, Sheila's office was getting phone calls from quote unquote authors who must have been on these tours, heard my little introduction, and she was getting like inundated with phone calls about how do I do that? I want to write in there. Who do I have to talk to? So finally, she was like, no, nobody's else. This is it. Like we're shutting this down. Like this became, word got out. And also too, I was very, very vocal about this on social media during the process. I posted a multitude of photos every night of where I was writing, you know, shots, what it was looking like from where I was writing out into the hallway. Like I was very, very, and people were engaging and people were spreading it. People were sharing it. I had a couple TikTok videos hit a couple thousand views. I mean, not that that's a lot, but you know, it is, it can be. I had people in the paranormal community get involved, and word just got out, and Sheila started getting phone calls. And she was like, No. So that's kind of how the hammer came down on that. She's like, this is not going to be a circus. This is a place of business. This is a very serious place. The tour guides take it seriously. And she knew I wasn't doing anything, right? It was no fault of mine. But she then had to kind of put the word out that, no, we vetted Brian before he came here. And they did. They spent a couple of weeks vetting me before they allowed me to make sure I was who I was, that I had the accolades I said I had, you know, my resume was real. And she told me later that they did. They did some pretty deep dive research into who I was to make sure I wasn't just some guy, you know, who wanted to come in and spend 8 weeks inside a haunted prison, you know, and that I was actually going to produce something quality and something that they could be proud of, because they sell it in the gift shop.
Oh, yeah, they'd have to.
Yeah, so they carry it in the gift shop, and they just, you know, Sheila and the staff just wanted to make sure that I was the right pick to do this, you know? But, and then that's why then she had to start shutting people down. And she was like, no, okay, you are now the only person who will ever do this. Like, I can't having every author from Timbuktu, you know, horror author trying to come in here to write, you know?
They embraced you to the extent that you even had a book release event there.
Yeah, so the book release was June 21st. It just happened 3 weeks ago, and it was at MSP. And for anybody who's not tracking, that's Missouri State Penitentiary. It's so much easier to say MSP,
yes.
And it's become part of my vernacular now. I just MSP is, you know, it's a word in my household at this point, an acronym. And yes, so it flew back. The professional ghost hunting company Get Haunted from Pennsylvania came out with all their ghost hunting gear, and we did a 10-hour book release party ghost hunt. It was kind of a mixture of the two. So we incorporated the book release party with them, with Get Haunted also doing their, you know, what they do best. It was great. We had about 60 people there, and from all over the country. Jefferson City, Missouri, you know, is not a hub. It's not a well-populated area.
Yeah.
So the majority of those people were not local. So I had, you know, very fortunate that I had, you know, that many people who booked plane tickets. They had to book hotel rooms. They had to do rent-a-cars. They had to take time off from work. They had to buy a ticket to the party. So I'm very humbled that I had that many go, you know what, this is a big enough deal to come out and support you. So yeah, we got about 60 people at MSP for
That's
my
really
party.
Cool.
It was amazing.
That's really cool. Now let's back way up, because how did this idea even come to you? Because when I was looking at the other books you've written, they're not all paranormal. You've got some different genres.
Yeah, the joke is amongst my little author clique, you know, my author friends that I run with. It started off as a joke, and I've adopted it as my official now, like, tagline is, I don't know how to stay in my lane. it started off as a joke because I write in so many genres, but Stephen King is my favorite author. If you look at Stephen King's work, sure, he's known for Pet Sematary, The Shining, Carrie, Salem's Lot, The Stand, It. You know, he's known for what we would consider horror, right? But you also got to remember, this is also the man who wrote Shawshank Redemption and Stand By Me and The Green Mile.
Yeah.
And right, he wrote Dolores uh-huh. Claiborne. He wrote The Running Man. He wrote, you know, so you start, you go like, wow, my God, he isn't just, you know, the master of horror, the modern master of horror. He's, you know, you think of Arnold Schwarzenegger and The Running Man, you don't think Stephen King, but guess what? that's him. So, you know, I think there's a lot, he has a lot of depth that he doesn't get credit for.
True, true.
And, you know, and I can keep going on, but, you know, you get the point. And that's what I wanted to be as an author. I wanted to be well-rounded. They also say you're supposed to write what you like to read, and I mm-hmm. like to read every genre. I don't know how I could possibly be happy in life writing the same genre over and over and over, especially when I don't like to read the same genre over and over. My five favorite authors are Stephen King, Ernest Hemingway, Sylvia Plath, Clive Barker, you know, you know what I mean? Like Anne Rice, it's the gamut, right? I mean,
yeah.
I can go from Hemingway to King to Sylvia Plath without blinking an eye. And so when I write, I kind of have that same tone. This is actually my only paranormal novel. I have other horror novels, but this is the first paranormal, and this is the first one where I tackled, you know, the classic haunted property story, the haunted house, haunted prison, whatever. I did mention that I have a trilogy. My trilogy is called Moonlight City Drive. That teeters on horror. It's about a detective hot on the trail of a Jack the Ripper-style killer, but there's a 300-year-old witch from Salem, Massachusetts, who every time the killer kills somebody, she reanimates the corpse because she's building an army of ghouls. And when the detective gets wind of this, he has to make a decision. Does he side with the witch to take down the killer, or does he side with the killer to take down the witch? That's my trilogy. And it's a lot of horror elements, right? Mm-hmm. But again, it's not paranormal. And then my other horror novel is Welcome to Parkview. And that is more Twilight Zone-y. It's more creepy and ominous and cerebral. And I try to scare you by what I don't show you, about the noise in the other room, you know, what's in the shadow, you know, fingernails under the door, and you're afraid to open the door. So that's my Welcome to Parkview novel. It's much more subtle. It's not in your face. So this was my first foray into the paranormal. I do have a historical war romance novel. I have a cybernetic dystopian novel, like a Johnny Mnemonic meets Mad Max. You know, I have an urban crime thriller. So yeah, I have a time travel novel, right? It's across the board, the genres that I write in. But yes, this was my first one where I was like, haunted house. Like,
now, had you,
let's do this.
Had you done some paranormal investigations, or was there something that got you interested in, because it's definitely a paranormal book?
Yes. The answer is no. As we talked, you know, before we went kind of live here, I was born and raised in Salem, Massachusetts. I lived there from birth until I was 30. And I also spent 8 years from the ages of 8 to 16 living in a funeral home in Salem, Massachusetts. So I think the whole paranormal, macabre, gothic kind of atmosphere was part of me as a kid, one, growing up around so many dead bodies, and also growing up in Salem. But I had never done a paranormal investigation. I had never gone on one. I had never been on a ghost hunt. My two favorite subgenres of horror movies are possession films and haunted house films. So you would think, you know, at this point in my life, I'm in my, you know, 40s, that I would have. And I never did. I was in Missouri for work. So a little bit about me real quick, just so you know how I got there. I was a cop for 16 years, patrolman for 16 years. So on the street, you know, on patrol, the beat officer. And then I got promoted to detective. And it's a 16-week course to be certified as a detective. It's 18 weeks. It's 18-week course to be certified as a detective. It's 10 weeks and then a 3-week break to go home. And then you come back and you do 8 weeks. And it's all in Missouri. That's where the training center is for the whole country. It's about 90 miles west of Jefferson City. Around week 7 of the first 10 weeks, me and I was there with 62 other police officers who were part of the training. I was there with, and they're from all over the country, right? So there was people from Hawaii, from Alaska, from California, from, it's everywhere. I mean, Florida, Texas, we were all a conglomerate. You know, none of us knew each other on day one. And, you know, you form, you know, little packs of friends. But we were running out of things to do because we were in the middle of nowhere, Missouri. And one of the other trainees, or whatever you want to call us, was looking online and he goes, "Hey, the Missouri State Penitentiary has overnight ghost hunts. You know, you guys want to do that? That's a little bit that's something different, right?" And I was like, "Oh hell yes!" I was like, "Oh my god!" I got so excited. I was giddy. I was like, "Oh my god!" Like an actual like ghost hunt, like with the stuff I see in the movies, like with gear and equipment. And I just couldn't believe that was a thing and that we could go to this, right? And so I was like a little kid, because I didn't even know that this existed. And we went. We went to the Missouri State Penitentiary, and we got on one of those. We did one of the overnights. We stayed till – we did the 3 a.m. one, right? So we were there from when it starts and, you know, to – we did the 3 a.m. cutoff time. And I didn't want to leave. everybody in my group was ready to leave. They were tired. They were like, oh, we got to drive back to the barracks because we stayed in these barracks. You know, and I was like, no. How do we stay longer? Like, I don't want this to end. I don't want to give the equipment back. You know, the staff were wrestling the K2 meters out of my hand. And I'm like, no, mine. You know, I was like Yoda in Empire Strikes Back, you know. I was so jazzed that had happened that I looked to see if they were doing it again the next weekend. I'm so ignorant that I had no idea that this was something they did every weekend, right? Like, I could have been doing this the last 7 weeks in a row if I had known. Come to find out, the following weekend, Nesper was there with the Warren Occult Museum artifacts.
Oh, wow.
And Get Haunted was there. So Nesper and Get Haunted were doing a dual overnight hunt with the Warren Museum's artifacts. I had never heard of Get Haunted before. It's the first time I'd ever seen anything about their company. Didn't even know who they were. I knew Nesper, one, because I'm from New England, but I'm also a horror junkie. So, you know, The Conjuring and right. just Ed and Lorraine is just people, right? They're just, you know who they are, right? It's like being a, you know, music fan and, you know, not knowing who John Lennon is, right? Yeah. It's just, right, iconic names in the field. So it was like, holy crap. Like, Nesper's going to be there. I don't know who the crap these Get Haunted people are. I could care less about that. But, you know, oh my God, there's going to be artifacts and there's a ghost hunt. And I was like, yes. So I went back to MSP the very next Saturday to this event, not knowing what I was walking into, not knowing that Get Haunted were in charge and they were going to, they put us into, they broke us up into small groups and they did hour-long rotations. For the first 4 hours, it was hour-long rotations at each of the four buildings. So you're allowed to be in the women's unit, general pop, which is A hall or housing unit 4, and then death row, which is building 3 in the gas chamber. Those are the four buildings that are open to the public. I had no idea that this was going to happen, right? I was so ignorant that night, but I wound up loving it. Because Get Haunted have their people at each of the locations with all of their like higher tech gear than you would normally find. And
oh, yeah.
They show you how to use it. And then they let you use it as the guest. So now I'm using like tracer lights and we're using REM pods and now I'm using EVP things and I'm just using all this gear. And I was like a kid in a candy store. I just couldn't believe what was happening. We did the Estes method in the gas chamber. If you read the book.
And they do that in the book.
That's right. So we'll get to like how real the book is to real life, even though it's fiction. Around like the third rotation, the third station, I guess, I started going, my God, there's a novel here. Like my author brain kicked in. You know, I like the excited 4-year-old on Christmas morning finally had settled and had allowed like my author brain to take over. And I was like, I don't know what the story is, but I feel like this is a novel. Because, and I started going through my head and I was like, the majority of horror movies or horror novels that involve a poltergeist or a haunting, usually, most of them involve the owners of the property or the owners of the house or the residents of the house experiencing the haunting and then being scared and then reaching out to ghost hunters. And the ghost hunters come in and then almost become the heroes, right? They come in and they solve it, or they, you know, like the Insidious. If you think of the Insidious series, you know, Elise comes in, you know, gets him back from, you know, the other side, or and they always seem to win. Like the ghost hunters come in as the heroes and solve the haunting, right? That's very kind of the formula. I was like, what if it's the other way around, and it's the ghost hunters who are there doing an event and the ghosts decide they don't want them there? Who saves them, or does anybody? And that was the first thought. That was my first thought for the book. Like you've read the book, so you know that that's not exactly the full like road I went down, but that was the trigger thought where I went, I think I have something unique here, because I don't know many stories where the ghost hunters walk in to the thick, right? Right? It's always they're trying to help or save the people who own the property. So it's like, how do I put this on its head? You know, how do I put a spin on the on a, you know, kind of a generic ghost hunting genre that we have? And that was the only thing I could think of. I was like, and this works. I was like, what if, you know? And then I was like, well, I'm going to come up with a fictitious company like Get Haunted. Well, Get Haunted is real. I was going to come up with a fictitious company that did what Get Haunted did that night. And then I was going to have it at a fictitious prison, right? And my brain was thinking about writing. So everything was going to be fiction. I was going to create a new company. I was going to create a prison. I was going to create this. I was going to create that. I had at the time, and I still do, it's funny that I'm going to say this, but I had already turned in my next novel idea to my editor, and it was already approved, and she had already given me a deadline to turn in the manuscript. I had the idea of a neo-noir, so like a Dark City meets The Crow meets Silence of the Lambs kind of type novel, where it's about a telephone operator. But one of those old school operators where they, you know, they pull the plug they gotta plug it into a hole, right? But there's a serial killer that when he calls, he says just a name and then he disconnects the line and that person winds up dead. But he will only talk to this one specific operator. And so now the police are involved in why her, she has no idea who he is, why she's been picked to always get the name. So that was my idea. That was the book that
which
I was
is a great
outlining.
Idea, by the way.
Well, we're still, so that is actually the book that I'm going to start writing when I come back from the Kentucky haunted house to write that. So we're, like, I know I'm jumping way ahead, but that book isn't off the, that book is actually going to have a late 2026 release. So that's still coming. It just got put on pause because of me going, because of MSP. So I talked to my editor and I was like, I think we gotta pause this. I said, I got an idea and I think it happens, has to happen now. I said, I am in love with this idea. I'm like, I'm very energized with it. The juices are flowing. And I pitched it to her and she's like, yes, I like it. It's different. I said, okay. So I reached out to Jenny, who is the kind of the head tour guide at MSP. And I found her on Facebook. That's how I found her. I'd remembered her from the ghost hunt. Found her on Facebook and I sent her like an unsolicited message. And I was like, hey, I was on your ghost hunt. You probably don't remember me, but I'm an author. And I was there with a bunch of guys. You know, we're all police officers. I wanted to write a novel. And then I gave her the idea. And I said, do you think it would be okay if I just use MSP as the setting? Let's just put the book there, right? It's just easy. The buildings are there. I've already spent two nights there. I can describe it really well. Instead of trying to create, let's give it a place everybody knows, right? She's like, no, I love this. Yes, this is, I says, oh my God, this is great. It would be awesome. You know, I think we'd be honored to have MSP in a book like this. So she's like, are you still in Missouri? I said, I am, for only for another week. Then I go home for 3 weeks, but then I come back for 8 weeks to finish to do the second half of my detective training. She was like, oh, great, cool. She's like, good. Well, when you come back, you know, just why don't you come on by, you know, a few times if you want to, like, you know, walk around the property. I'll give you a private tour, you know, just you and me, you know, if you want to take pictures. If it was all, that was the offer. Come and take pictures for reference. Yeah, I can give you some more history. I can maybe give you some brochures. Like, I'll help you with research. That was kind of what Jenny was offering. I don't know how it happened. I still don't remember. And, whenever I get asked this, I refuse to like make something up. So I'm going to have to be honest. I don't remember how it happened. But at some point, one of us said, or it came up in joking, wouldn't it be funny if you just, while you were in your training, just stayed here and wrote while you were here for those 8 weeks training? And somehow that joke turned into, well, I don't know, would that be possible? Turned into, let me contact the person in charge of the prison who works for the state, turned into, so her name is Sheila and she wants to talk to you, turned into, yes, you've been approved, like over the course of like two and a half weeks, 3 weeks. I went from having this idea to now being allowed to stay there for the 8 weeks that I was in training. So my training was Monday through Friday. Yeah, my training was Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. every day. It was only 6 hours each day. And then I would go to MSP at night and I would stay there all weekend to write. that's how that happened. And I had a meeting with Sheila before night number one, where she gave me a very specific list of do's and don'ts, cans and cans. Basically, she looked at me and said, you know, I'm sticking my neck out here, letting you do this. This is your list of rules. You know, mess up once and you're gone. Like, I, you know, skin off my back. And, you know, the rules weren't, they weren't many, but they were definitely ones I, you know, made sure I followed. And I did. And, you know, because they were really letting me have free rein. People spend good money to just spend 4 hours alone in there, like good money. And I was there for 8 weeks, you know, allowed to go wherever I wanted, anytime I wanted, with my laptop, and sit anywhere and write in those four buildings. I had free rein of those four buildings.
So did you stay there all night, like, or did you get done training? Because you had, you were really busy because you had training.
Yeah. So,
and then you go there to write.
I got a hotel room about, I got a hotel room, I think it's like 4 miles from MSP. And I would leave MSP at like 4 a.m., 3 a.m. And I'd hit the hotel to get a few hours of sleep in just a shower and then go and start my day.
You had to have been exhausted at the end of that 8 weeks.
I think my excitement and my adrenaline kept me going. I do know that when it was over, I was exhausted.
Oh, you had to have been.
But I think being there was so amazing for me. And the staff became family. I mean, they started off as just tolerating me, and then they became friends, and then they, now I really feel like family. In fact, they had their Christmas party, and I guess I was topic of conversation at one point, and one of the tour guides says, it doesn't feel right having this Christmas party without Brian. I don't work there.
That's so sweet.
Right? But they noticed I was missing. Like, they were like, they said they felt like I should be there because I'm part of MSP now, right? And, you know, they, and at night, I started to help them with things that only the staff are allowed to do. They would be like, here, Brian, they toss me the keys to the gas chamber and go, hey, go drive down and lock the gas chamber for the tour. Or we would have to clear buildings at night to make sure that nobody was hiding in any of the cells or anything like that. And they started to let me just go do that by myself. They'd be like, hey, Brian, can you go clear, you know, housing unit one for us? You know, so they would start to like give me tasks. Oh, I started passing out K2 meters to the ghosts, to the guests at one point, you know, and like collecting IDs. I was checking people in at the door because I just knew what was supposed to happen. So when I decided to make it take place at MSP, I then reached out to Rob, who's the owner of Get Haunted. And I proposed him the idea of writing them into the book instead of coming up with a fictitious ghost hunting crew. I was worried about some sort of copyright. Is actually why I reached out to him. I was like, hey, you know, I'm an author. I don't know if you remember me. And he did remember me from the night that they hosted. I was just concerned about copyright issues. I didn't want to get sued, you know, using a real company's, like a trademark company's name in my book. And Rob not only gave me permission, but Rob like almost fell out of his chair. Just that someone wanted to put his company as like main characters in, you know, a horror novel. And me and Rob have become very, very close over this past 18 months or now however long, or 12 months total. Because I started writing in July of, so we're at the 1 year mark right now of when I started writing. Rob and the whole crew of Get Haunted, they've become like an extended family for me. I've gone to events. They had a supernatural soiree in New Jersey on a battleship, and I was the guest of honor at their big soiree. They're just amazing people. I'm so glad. It's like serendipitous.
Yeah.
That I went that second night. Because if I hadn't gone that second night, I would never have come up with the idea for a novel. I never would have found out who Get Haunted was. I never would have stayed at MSP for 8 weeks. None of this would have happened if I hadn't gone that second night.
Right.
If I hadn't been so enamored with that first night and I hadn't made the decision to go again the following weekend, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. You know, I wouldn't be involved in any of this. Just to add on to that, how it's changed my life. It's changed my writing career. at that Supernatural soiree that I was the guest of honor on the Battleship New Jersey. So Wade Kirby, if you don't know who he is, he's the guy who's in charge of the real Annabelle doll. He's part of Nesper, and Annabelle is his. He's the curator of Annabelle. He's the real Annabelle doll's
handler,
right? And he was at the soiree, and Wade is amazing. He's just an amazing guy. He was there, and he goes, "Have you thought about making this a series?" And I said, "Absolutely not." So this will not be a series. He goes, "Why?" I said, "Well, I no spoilers. It couldn't possibly be a series. If you've read the book, you kind of know why it couldn't be a series." But I didn't want to say anything to him because, you know, he wanted to read the book. I said, "But it couldn't be a part two and part three like my Moonlight City Drive is a trilogy, right? It couldn't be like that." I said, "But what it could be is it could be like Babysitter's Club or Nancy Drew or Hardy Boys or Goosebumps, where Get Haunted is always part of it, but it's a new location in a new set of characters. But Get Haunted is the, you know, like they're the Hardy Boys, right? The Rob and Sarah are the owners of Get Haunted. So if Rob and Sarah are in every book and each book is a Get Haunted tale, I can change locations and I can change characters. I can change storyline." And I was like, "Well, why are you asking that?" He goes, "I want you to meet somebody." Brought me over to the table and he introduced me to Ernie and Denise Pack. They own the Ditto House in West Point, Kentucky, which is considered Kentucky's most haunted house structure. It was a bed and breakfast at one point. It was an inn. If you Google Kentucky's most haunted ... you're going to probably get the Ditto House. Wade said, I want you to meet them. I think their location would be perfect if you were going to do a book two. Through lots of communication with Ernie and Denise, lots of bouncing ideas back and forth, how do we do this? They invited me to the Ditto House for 5 days a couple months ago to come and just sleep there, get a feel for the house, see if, you know, I had any juices flowing. And now I am going to the Ditto House, or I'm leaving in 2 weekends, and I'm going to be there all the way through August writing book two in the Ditto House. Again, another horror novel on location, and the Ditto House will be the setting. So this took a whole life of its own, right? So forget about These Walls Still Talk in the MSP book. Now I've got book two, and now I now have other people from all over the country who own haunted properties contacting me, asking if I'd be willing to come stay at their place to write more Get Haunted Tale books at their location.
That's awesome.
It's crazy.
That is really awesome.
You remember, I went on my very first ghost hunt 13 months ago. So if 14 months ago you told Brian that this would be what I was doing, I would be like, what the crap happens in my life? Like, what happens in my life to make all of this, to put me where I am, right? And I just keep using the word serendipitous because it is. It was like lightning in a bottle. The planets aligned for me to be there, to go there, for Get Haunted to be there, for Nesper to be there that night. Just for MSP to be so receptive, for Sheila to allow me to stay there for 8 weeks, because I think the book is fantastic enough to stand on its own as a horror novel. But the fact that my diary of everything that happened to me while I was there for those 8 weeks is at the back of the
book. That's really interesting.
Makes it even more special. It's more of an allure for people to want to buy and read the book, because, you know, when I tell people, you get the book, which is a horror fiction novel, it's all made up. But then you turn the page after, you know, the end, quote unquote, and then you have 20, 30 more pages, and it's just my diary of everything that happened to me in real life while I was writing. I just think that adds so much more. So to be able to stay there and write, I wouldn't have had that diary if I wrote this from my writing office back home, you know, if this was just another haunted horror novel. But the fact that I was there and then my diary made the book, So now I got to keep a diary at the Ditto House because I can't have book two not have a diary in it, right?
No, I loved that concept. I loved the concept of having it in there because it was surprising because the book ends and it's like I read it on Kindle and it's like I'm like at 85% or something like that. I'm like, what's in the rest of the book?
you know?
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with author Brian Paone about his latest book, These Walls Still Talk. You can buy his books wherever books are sold, and you can get more information at his website, brianpaone.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, then you can become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you could sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.